I'll push our little clock here. So the 42 minutes has started. Hello, everyone. This is not the usual way we do this. I'm Doug. I'm joined by Will, and we have on a day. And we
I am
are.
here from Northern Virginia. The mountains of Northern Virginia.
And talking sync and all other related topics today, this morning. But we've been wrestling with our service provider and haven't got the show going like we wanted to. But so a couple curious things. I noticed it seems like now that we're doing the show on Tuesday, all the best days of the month are on Tuesdays. So
That's weird. I was born on a Tuesday. And Tuesday's child is full of grace. So there you go.
it's the 22nd, so another fool show. But it's
Right.
also the 33rd show. So this is the 33rd degree here.
We're
And
going to get initiated.
I am a renowned fairy seer in the Odalie community who
See how.
was
So could you.
decreed an ambassador to the realm of Fae by R.J. Stewart, the mage and fairy seer, musician, author, researcher himself, but I've since stepped down. That was 2 years ago. I've stepped down from that post. Too much flying back and forth.
See, I was trying to explain to Doug that I needed some information. I mean, you're very knowledgeable as far as fairy lore goes, correct?
Sort of, yeah.
Could
Would you
you go ahead?
consider yourself that a little like a
No,
fairy, an elf?
there are people, there are flesh and blood individuals who are descended from a lineage or many, many various lineages that are elven. I identify as Eldarie. Fae is a word that actually refers to another form of life that is non-corporeal. They do not manifest physically. So,
Morgan Le Fay, that from the King Arthur, then that would be the connection there. I see.
well, see, they're wonderful. See, that's another thing that I was taught many decades ago, and also through synchronous means, is that many things align in our lives through place names and repeating names. And ironically, when I found my life partner, we are on Apple Mountain. The apple tree itself is a demarcation point for the realm of the Fae, where they come in and where they go back. There is ancient apple lore that goes way. I mean, even Avalon itself, the name of Arthur's mythic island, means Island of the Apples. So that's a key there. One of my first spiritual manifestations took place back when I was living in Underhill's Crossing in New York State in Westchester County. Our neighborhood was once part of a fruit farm, and then it got divvied up, as everything did, the onslaught of the suburbs in the 1920s. But before that, as I was saying earlier, before the snafu, it was an apple orchard. Before that, it was a Native American village that belonged to the Agawam Indians, who were a splinter group of the Iroquois, but they've since intermarried out of existence. There is no more Agawam Indian Nation tribe.
How much
So,
similarities do you see between the Fae tradition and like what you know about Native American mythology?
well, it's interesting that it's interesting you should ask that. That's a really excellent question because one of my facetious jokes to my friends is that the Eldalie and the Native Americans have more in common than just bows and arrows. You know, there is this deep similarity in the resonance of Native American culture, viewing everything alive as integral components of everything else. Everything is connected. As a matter of fact, their idea of deity, unlike the Abrahamic religions and Yahweh, there is no concept that can actually define a supreme being. There is just Wakantanka, who is the unknowable, the great mystery. So when people who are Christian apologists try to define Wakantanka as God, that is erroneous, because it is the vast unknowable, the great unknown. But yet, from that great spirit, everything emanates. And I believe that all physical manifestation in this dimension is an extension of the thought of Wakantanka. And in Hinduism, you have another parallel with Brahma, who's at the top of this great ascension of many different deities, which are all essentially just manifestations of Brahma.
Right.
And it's just a wonderful, it's a fantastic, miraculous place that we live in. But 2 years ago, when Robert John Stewart, who himself, by the way, is half Welsh and half Scots, decreed me an ambassador to the realm of Fae. Every year, unbeknownst to most people, there's this wonderful convocation out in northern Washington State called the Fairy and Human Relations Congress. And it lasts for 4 days every June. And it encompasses my birthday. I'm the 25th of June. And we attempt to forge an alliance with the Fae. Now, since the Fae are what Christopher Knowles himself refers to as the elusive companions, and those of us in the tradition refer to as the invisible neighbors,
right,
or the good folk, they are non-corporeal. When at the Scalitude Retreat, where this takes place, in a ski resort town, it's very beautiful in the summer, Twisp, Washington, we had this one talent night called Meadow Stage, and all of those attendees who have talents that can be spotlighted on the stage, such as playing, singing, Andre Jones would be great there with his Behind the Eight Ball. And I've tried to encourage him to attend. But if you sing, if you recite, if you orate, if you recite poetry, you're encouraged to take part in Meadow Stage. So it went on for hours into the night, and I'm like, all right, I've had enough. So I'm going back to my Barham house. At Barham house is a green, friendly, clean energy home where they have lodgings for some of the attendees, and it's built into the side of the hill so that it remains cool during the summer and heated during the winter. And I was going back along this winding path, and all of a sudden, gentlemen, out of the side of a 12-foot-tall cabin emerges this 12-foot-tall, feminine, what to me was feminine, I read her as feminine, 12 feet tall, hooded, robed entity that is sort of undulating as she is walking right across my path from the right, out of the side, emerging from this wooden cabin. And my first, looking at this, and I have to cite, the second sight runs through my family. It's inherited. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And I look down to the ground to my right for a cool second and look back at her. And just at that second, when my eyes met, it was like, pew, she broke apart into this wispy, three-armed kind of, like the triple spiral is what I'm getting at, that you see as petroglyphs all over places in yeah. Great Britain and Ireland. And then that, too, just sort of like mistily kind of just drifted and became part of everything again. And I just kept going because this, you know, you don't hang on these pivotal events like, oh, my gosh, what am I? You know, it was just par for the course for me. Before I forgot to mention that under my home backyard apple tree in the backyard, that is where one of my ancestors who conveyed to me telepathically that his name was Watgruff appeared to me. Watgruff. And then I brought that name to somebody who knows Celtic better, and Gaelic better, rather, and they were like, oh, no, you say Votgrith. And I'm like, Votgrif, but it's spelled. And they're like, you don't go by what it looks like in Anglican. You don't look at it and say, oh, that Anglo pronunciation is Votgrif. It's Votgrif. So I'm like, that sort of sounds like Griffin is in there. And the Griffin, that great mythological creature, half eagle and half lion, is a guardian of knowledge.
Oh, I see.
They are the guardians of the knowledge. So that was at 11. I was 11. And let me recapitulate about that mind-blowing synchronicity that first said, listen to synchronicities. When I was spring cleaning with my mother one afternoon, I had taken a year off between high school and college. I went to the School of Visual Arts in New York City. And it was early spring, 1976, and I'd been backyard cleaning and raking and gathering sticks and felled branches and whatnot. And I go back inside, and I'm up in my room, and my mother's like, honey, I found something. And I'm like, oh, cool, since the neighborhood had been like a colonial apple orchard and previous to that a Native American village, I thought that it was a relic. So I go out there. And she's like, what do you think? And I'm like, oh, man, it was a skeleton of a cat that she had found underneath the kitchen steps outside in the backyard. So we were trying to figure out, was it our cat Siam who went missing? Because there was still some mummified skin on where the jawbone was, and there was a hole in it. So he had once been clipped by a car, and he needed his jaw wired. And that was part of the skeleton. And then the tail was apparently broken, and his son, Frisky, had a broken tail. So we're like, wait a minute, that's impossible. How could the father and son merge? So that was like a metaphor. But then we realized that there had been an old tomcat. An old tomcat had probably come into the area to mate with some of the suburban female cats, and he had a big head, and his skull was kind of large, and the body was long and slender, and he had just a limp, hanging tail because he had broken his tail. So we figured that was the guy. So, all right, so the mystery solved. We go back inside to my room, and as I enter the room, I had the radio on, and the lady DJ, this is exactly what she said, gentlemen. I'm Mary Thomas, your afternoon DJ, and it's spring cleaning time. Time to bring the skeletons out of the family closet. And I was like, I like sat down, and my jaw dropped. I'm like, no way. And I just sat there. I sat and I took it in. I mean, here was an outside event on every level. It was a true, real, reality-based event. And then I come into the home, back to my room where the radio was on, and boom, there is a direct reflection of what was happening in my life with what the lady DJ was just saying. So that was key. As I said earlier, Jung, I was a great reader of Jung, but I've since kind of gone past him. Because I don't think anymore that everyone is necessarily connected to the great dreaming mind of the universal unconscious, but he had said in German, to paraphrase him in English, synchronicity opens up more doors for us than heretofore are open, or whatever, something like that.
But I see the same symbolism crossing over from mythology, like Jung said, into how your synchronicities play out. There's a common thread. It's like they come from the same source.
Mm-hmm.
The same symbol base, and it's the same thing with dreams too. I think that the main kick that I'm on right now is how these things are useful. To me, it seems like there's some sort of like use to us that these things have. Like
the interesting thing is in your wonderful novella, Winter's Labyrinth, when you have that quintessential experience of the Cave of Voices, my mentor, who had made me a Bastarin since I've stepped down, as I said, but when Robert John Stewart got the ball rolling, so to say, with his publishing house, Stewart Books, the tradition that he expounds upon is referred to as the underworld tradition. Now, it doesn't mean when you mention this to someone from the Abrahamic religions and Judeo-Christianity and Islam, they're sort of like, underworld, isn't that bad? Because they think of hell and they think of perdition right. and punishment. It's not like that at all. But it's easier to say underworld.
You see how this relates to what's cool to me is because I know that you're knowledgeable as far as the green man symbolism and stuff like that too. Mm-hmm. You have like Osiris being put into the tree, or the fact that
he was green skinned.
Right. It was like chlorophyll or whatever, and the fact that he keeps birthing back. But the fairies come from the woods or the forest. They're like the forest spirit in a way, and
they're definitely the mind of Earth Mother and nature interfacing with us. Now, again, when I had my encounter with Lady Scalitude at the Scalitude retreat, and I'm telling this to my friends and family, because everyone in my friends is my newfound family, and they're like, oh, this one friend of mine, Saphir, she's like, oh, that was Lady Scalitude. And I'm like, wow. So there's a name, and that turns out to be an integral character. She is with the, I'm sorry that I don't know the nation tribe's name, but in that region of the Cascade Mountains, they have an ancient mythology where time and again they are in contact with 12-foot-tall giants who can appear and disappear at will. So my having had an encounter, it's like what I'm getting at is there's a wonderful animated film called The Secret of Kells. It's an award-winning film. It's an animation, allegedly how the Book of Kells was devised with the help of the Fae. And there's this wonderful song that Icy, one of the Fae girls in the plot, sings. It's Gaelic. Part of it is Gaelic. Part of it is in English. And it's called Pangir Bon, which literally means cat white. And she sends the then child-aged future St. Brendan's cat as a fetch. A fetch in, even in the craft, is that part of yourself that you send out, sort of like an astral body, but in one particular tradition of the craft, you have the fairy, F-E-R-I, which was established by Victor and Cora Anderson, who are no longer with us, but they've left this vast tradition.
Do you feel that the fairy world and the astral plane are related? I mean, are they the same thing?
Yes, they aren't the same thing. The realm of the Fae, that is an excellent question. Keep asking these excellent questions. The realm of the Fae is another dimension. it's another dimension. The astral is an emanation of us. And I'm still not sure, even at 55, well, I'll be 55 next month, but I'm still not sure how it works, whether we're an extension of it or whether it is an extension of us. But the realm of the Fae is completely different. And when you study the Native American lore, you find out, and back to the Indians, to the Native Americans from the Cascade Mountains, who have this folklore of these 12-foot-tall giants that can come and go at the speed of thought, that correlates. And even in Japan, where you have the ancient indigenous Shinto religion, you have entities that exist alongside us, but it, as I mentioned before, with Christopher Knowles's Elusive Companions, what us in the tradition refer to as the invisible neighbors, they are here. They've pre-existed us, but it's really hard to define because they're here at the same time, but sort of like between and behind and in back of and within everything. So when
these experiences, like Emanuel Swedenborg's,
fantastic visionary. He was definitely, he had the sight. He had access. I mean, he was one of my deceased mentors. I voraciously consumed Swedenborgian literature for quite a while, and that dovetailed with my interest in Rudolf Steiner, you know, and anthroposophy. And Steiner himself, there's a college, a Rudolf Steiner College out in Sacramento, California. There are Waldorf schools that teach children from kindergarten to 12th grade based on anthroposophic teaching methods. And his agrarian school, biodynamic farming, is just amazing. One of the keys to it is that the farmers themselves, see, I'm from a long line of, my mother's side of the family is where the Dalier come from Thuringia in southeastern Germany. And they lived for centuries in the mountains, densely pine forested. They were all mostly agrarian. The women became seamstresses. We also have a very creative artistic gene. We just were born with the desire to paint, to draw, to collage, whatever, to sculpt. But a lot of us were agrarians and farmers. So in biodynamic farming, which Rudolf Steiner brought from Germany, you as a farmer, as a steward of the earth, form an alliance with the Fae. That you have that alliance, and man, their produce is excellent. I mean, there is a place in upstate New York, for instance, Ghent, G-H-E-N-T. The whole town there is almost all anthroposophic. Their farming is almost all biodynamic. And, you know, if I had had kids myself, and if I was well-heeled, I would have sent them to Waldorf schools, because they say, yes, there are fae. Yes, we are immortal. We do survive what appears to be death. We keep right. going on. And if we like, we keep coming back. See, that's another thing. I think that, oh, last night I had seen Spellbound by Alfred Hitchcock, and it's all about one character having amnesia and trying to regain his identity. And the thing is that what that struck with me was that we don't have to become something different than we are. What we need to do in life, the quest is remembering who we are, and getting rid of that conditioned down amnesia. Because okay. Douglas, you and
are
also
you a Dick
Will,
fan?
You,
are you a Philip K. Dick fan?
Am I a Philip K. Dick fan? Well, I like what I've been exposed to, and I'm really happy that they're coming out with an animated version of The King of the Elves.
Yeah, that's so crazy, huh? It's nutty, The King of the Elves, which is my next question, but go on. I mean, do you know much about K. Dick at all? Have you read anything by him?
Well, I do know that he was a twin, and
right.
his twin sister died in infancy, so I think that that's where that schism occurred. As a matter of fact, my partner was born a twin too,
wow.
and his brother died in childbirth, so he insists that he has grown proportionally, and he's a protector for him, even now, while he's, whatever, 45 or whatever.
That sounds very familiar to K. Dick. If you go to the New York Times website and look up Philip K. Dick for May 20th and May 21st, they have an excerpt in there where you can learn a little bit more about him if you want. However, I think it's interesting we're talking about twins, because this has a lot to do with the fairy lore as well. If I may, in the movie The Avatar, how the individual is a twin and he takes over this giant, you know, blue fairy god. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, and they're very feline,
right.
and they are inextricably entwined with
the
magnificence of their entire flora and fauna.
Right.
And what the cue, that ganglia of nerves at the end of their braid, which is actually an appendage that hooks into the cue of the other animals, either
right.
the dragon riders or the horses. And remember, the horses in the film are almost like, in the Norse pantheon, Odin's steed, Sleipnir, has 8 legs. Well, these
right.
horses have 6. These have 6, but nice. Still, I'm like, wait a minute, that's almost like Sleipnir.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good point.
But see, the wonderful thing is that a film like that not just helps the droned populace, the dumbed-down populace, to say, wait a minute, this is what's happening to Earth right now. I mean, it's wonderful to see this illustration with this fictitious planet, quote-unquote, Pandora, but, I mean, this is what's happening now. The military has just become the lapdog for the corporatocracy, which is decimating nature and just stomping out our divine spark, just making us shills for them. I remember, I mean, my father was, this is another story, my parents are both abductees. I'm an abductee, but I don't say that they were off-world. I say that they're an agency, like with the Knowlesian illustration, the elusive companions. I think that they're inextricably entwined with the concept of the Fae and the invisible neighbors, and they're just checking on certain families because it's an intergenerational thing all the way down from the beginning of time. They're just checking in and making sure that something stayed or took.
And, you're just joining us. Sorry to interrupt, Anadip.
Not at all.
25 minutes into the 33rd show, 42 minutes. As you've been talking, there's a number of things. You mentioned your relationship to your family and how you bring the different symbols together to try and figure out what's going on.
Yes.
And so the spring clean is just so loud. I have that circled and written down on my page in front of me because that seems like that's a theme that's going on in the sync community right now. But then I also have 12, your 12-foot giant and your cat skeleton. We've got an interesting reading going on is what I'm saying, but the direction I want to take this a little bit is how did you discover the sync community? It's interesting because you're so integrally wound up into it. You've been a commentator on blogs for since
I had even started one on an alternate provider in the blogosphere called blog.com. I actually think they're in India, but it was, as I told you, at the Synchronous in the City summit. It was called Revolving Door Stargate, and I'm very much a proponent of stargates and how the ancient worldwide civilization that was very much like the Na'vi, who lived within nature and were so enmeshed with the magnificence and the divinity of physical nature, not a race that looked for everything after death, but here and now. I had been to Ireland and visited one of the ancient stargates, Newgrange. I want everyone out there to please research Newgrange. Even to this day, it is wrongly attributed, even by more knowledgeable archaeologists, as a passage tomb. It's not a passage tomb. It's a stargate. If and when, I would love for people in the sync community to get like a package deal to travel to Ireland, at least to see Newgrange. But then when you're there and you see this fantastical subterranean structure that's older than the pyramids of Egypt, you're like, I want to see other ones. So you're going to want to, there's a wonderful book that came out by an internationally renowned dowser, Tom Graves, and fittingly enough, the title of the book is Needles of Stone, and it's all about how the ancient worldwide civilization had knowledge of ley lines. They constructed monolithic structures to actually act as acupunctural nodes of Earth Mother.
Oh, wow, that's a good
one. As all the planets, the stars, they're all living entities, and these nodes that they doused, that is where they constructed these vast stone monuments and temples. Newgrange served, I feel, intuitively, as a stargate for incoming and outgoing races. I mean, it's this straight line that every winter solstice, the sun rises on winter solstice morning, and it peaks pierces through the passage and illuminates this vast cathedral-like structure that is an eight-sided room, I believe. And when I went there, despite the fact that it was pouring rain that day, so we were all soggy in our rain suits, and there were two busloads of high school students from, one was from France, one was from Germany, just being inside this chamber that is like thousands of years old. Nothing has seeped through. You can't even put a piece of paper through the stones. They are fitted so perfectly. There is no mortar. There is no seepage of lime. It's, you know, and fortunately, it is one of the most extant of these ancient structures today. And another one is the sacred hill of Tara, which up until recently there was some fear that there was going to be this high-speed, multi-lane highway built near it, but that has been altered, so that is not happening. That is being constructed elsewhere. But most of the hill of Tara is all underground. It's all subterranean. And you can see how the ancients themselves terraformed this vast area into two interlocking concentric circles. And so thank the gods that this hasn't yet been disturbed, because all of its magnificence is underground. It is literally below ground. Now, I think it should stay that way. If those of us who are gifted and do practice soul travel can access it, that's another thing. But
can I ask what you do in the physical world, you know, outside of the soul travel? How do you?
Well, I'm a reader advisor, and I'm also an artist. I've got only 9 pieces up on my page on redbubble.com.
Could you give us a page? We're real curious.
Well, redbubble.com is a wonderful I think it's just my first name that I'm using. I think it's just go to redbubble.com. It's a wonderful art site. I thought it was kind of, I'm very wary of a lot of stuff, and I thought, oh, they're just going to rip off the artist community, but it's completely legitimate. They turn your art into everything from iPhone covers to T-shirts, posters, matted and framed prints, postcards, greeting cards, whatever you like, and you gauge the price. So there is always a very reasonable fee for Redbubble itself to earn off of your stuff. But I highly recommend it to people. And if you go to redbubble.com, you can see, just look, do a search for Anadae. My first name is spelled A-N-A-D-A-E. And I've only got 9 pieces up because I'm sort of like, a lot of the other stuff is kind of, is a little too deep for people. I don't know what to say. But, that'll give.
I'm always looking for serendipity. And I think one of the things that I'm sensing that's happening. So you were one of, and I want to talk about this a little bit. You traveled from your home to New York to experience the sink in the city. And so.
Oh, yes. It was very important for me. Yep.
So what's so interesting about you is that you're fully immersed in the community, but then because you're not like selling anything, you don't have a blog as
you know, maybe the thing is that when I started Revolving Door Stargate, I had only done one piece, and it was on probably what you've heard of. There's this weird clock in England called the chronophage, which means eater of time. And it looks like a coelacanth, but it also looks like a camel cricket that lives in caves, and it supposedly is based on a design that a clockmaker who is also an alchemist. This sounds like something out of that Guillermo del Toro movie, Kronos, but
that's funny. I was thinking of Pan's Labyrinth earlier. You kept talking about the
see that, and that too is a Guillermo del Toro. I'm dying for him to come out with Hellboy 3, man. Come on, Liz is going to have twins.
Yeah, I know. It's nutty. Nutty, dude.
There you go again with that wonderful twin archetype.
Yes, yeah. But
So I just let that go. And I don't know. I do have, you might be able to ascertain this from my conversation with y'all, but I do have attention deficit disorder. So I'm not taking anything for it. I don't want to pollute my body with farm chems. So it's difficult for me to focus on things, and I do try, but the thing that does help me ground, I often wear a lot of amber, and that's a wonderful, it's a tree, fossilized tree sap, so essentially it helps me to ground, and I don't know, you know, so I started the blog and you know, let it go, and maybe it's time for me to come back, you know, because, I mean, I have had such clarity of mind, and that's why it's so wonderful to see a generation younger than me pick up on the cues from the multiverse.
Right.
That we are integral players, and just be yourself. Be who you are. And you need to remember who you are, and that's why I had mentioned earlier that when I'd seen Hitchcock's Spellbound last night, that was the whole key to me. I came away with, wow, it's not that we have to become something other than ourselves. We have to remember who we really are, you know?
Remember, Total Recall. So, I'm looking at your art now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, so the fascinating thing to me is that it seems like right now we have this immersion of synchronistic artists, or I don't know, synchronicity artists.
Yeah. Hey, that's very beautiful.
And so I have this sense that we're going to have this art show somewhere 2012 or 2013.
Oh, that would be so fantastic.
And
that
so,
would be, I'm completely with that.
Well, I'm the midwife here. I can feel it. I want to birth this thing.
Wonderful.
Like, you're an artist. David Plait's an artist. Wilner. You know, I'm seeing these different pieces, and it's like, okay, and we need, like, some kind of book to sell, you know, like a sync book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of Wilner, wait, listen to this. You know that one of the – speaking of Steve Wilner, you know that one of the appellations that he was using, moniker that he was using, was Psychonaut 777. And also then you've got Jake Koitza. And my moniker for the whole thing that we're in right now, rather than Synchromystic, back in the late 70s I devised this name called Synchronaut. So we were, you have this, the knot from Psychonaut 777, and then you've got the synchro from Jake Koitza, and synchronaut, meaning they who traveled through life using synchronicity
right.
as directives. But, of course, that didn't catch on, but that's cool, you know? I mean, this is like a whole new
synchronaut.
World. You know?
Synchronaut or sync head. I mean, it all works.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about the Sync in the City and, you know, your experience as someone who experienced
I felt like I was a participant in a wonderful coming together of minds. That's why I refer to it as the Synchronous in the City Summit, because so many integral people within this community, the Synchronicity community, came together to share their take what they had learned, Douglas, you reading from Winter's Labyrinth, and everyone else presenting in their own way, Andre Jones with his Behind the Eight Ball synchronicity music songs. And the interesting thing is that he had eight songs relating to the serendipity of the people who had put questions in a hat, and one of the songs was based on an ancient Hawaiian spiritual tradition called Ho'oponopono, and the four main tenets of Ho'oponopono is once you as an individual discover a problem that's disturbing your community, you are an integral player in healing that problem. So the four tenets are, I'm sorry, I love you, please forgive me, thank you. And I'm like, no, how simple is that? I'm like, no, it's like so healing, but yet it's so simple. Why does it have to be that simple? So that was another synchronicity for me right there. So I'm like, I'm in the right place. You know, I felt a very wonderful, smooth, pristine presence, and there've got to be more. You know, there have to be more of these.
Well, that's why I'm thinking this art show, it somewhere, like maybe San Francisco, probably New York, just because it seems like New York is such a nexus place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I used to live in New. I lived in New York for a long time. Bronxville, Yonkers, Williamsburg, Brooklyn, the Lower East Side. And my family had a summer home in Sag Harbor, Long Island, for decades, which was built in 1743. So I, you know, New York to me is where my molecules came from. So I'm very much part of it, even though I'm living in the wilds of Virginia at the moment. So I am always happy to return there. If indeed it takes place on the left coast of the colonies, I'm down for that too. I have no aversion to air travel.
Well, I can't imagine that this movement doesn't continue to become or just flow the way it has been. Like I've been commenting on blogs since 2007 or 2008.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe even a year earlier in 2006, because that's the first time I got someone's Compaq computer from their job. They were getting rid of computers, and I just wiped whatever was on it, and then that died. And after that died, I was like, I'm sorry, I'm connected now. So I got myself a Mac, and now that's 6 years old, and that is dying. So... if anybody sees me missing, it means I'm in between computers. But I'm trying to not see that it dies. So.
Uh-huh. Well, how much time we got left there, Doug?
This is the end of the show. It was a pleasure having you on today. I'm really glad that we did this, and I apologize for all the technical problems.
Not at all. Not at all. But, you know, I'm as an elf, I'm down more with nature, so... And the weather is against us, and who knows what TPTB, the powers that be, are up to. Like I said, they find out about us, they squeeze in sideways and try to monitor everything.
Perhaps.
Okay.
But we're making it better. We're making it better, and I'm delighted to have been on.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll have you again, and thank you, everyone. Tune in next week for another 42 minutes, and I guess it'll be a surprise what happens then. Hopefully everything works like it's supposed to.
Okay, safe journeys, everybody.
Okay, bye-bye.